Hello, and thanks for joining us today for our first monthly legal podcast with Missouri Press Association Hotline Attorney Gene Manicky. This is Dawn Kitchell, Education Director for the Missouri Press Foundation, and in today's program, Gene is going to talk about several of her most asked legal questions on newspaper advertising. Each month, Missouri Press will be bringing you a new legal podcast on issues important to Missouri's newspapers. If you have further questions about topics covered in these podcasts, or any newspaper-related legal questions, Gene is available to give advice to active members of the Missouri Press Association at no charge. At the end of this program, we'll provide contact information for Gene, and you can always find that information on our website, www.mopress.com. Gene Manicky has served as the Missouri Press Association legal hotline attorney since 1992. Her firm, the Manicky Law Group, is based in Kansas City, Missouri. Gene, welcome.
Thanks, Don. It's great to be here.
Let's get started talking about important legal issues in advertising.
Okay, I think I'm ready. Do you have some questions for me?
I do. Let's tackle political advertising. Gene, we've just been through a political season, and this spring, beginning in April, there will be school board elections. What special considerations do advertising departments need to keep in mind as they begin to get advertising from political campaigns?
You know, Don, I can always tell when it's a political season because the calls to the hotline increase in frequency, and they always relate to the attribution line that goes at the bottom of political advertising. The Press Association just finished going through some litigation over the subject, and we had hoped to establish a privilege for newspapers to not have liability if that advertising attribution line didn't get put in the ad. And unfortunately, as we got into it, we discovered that we were going to have a hard time being successful changing that rule in the courts. So for now, it's very important that advertising departments make a point that every political advertisement that comes in for a ballot issue or for a candidate have the line at the bottom that gives attribution to the source for the ad. There are different rules for state and for federal advertising. The state rules are that if the ad is paid for by a candidate, then you have to have the first and the last name of the candidate. And if it's paid for by a committee, you need the name of the committee, and you need the name and title of the treasurer who is serving for that committee. If it's paid for by a corporation or a business entity, then you need the name of the entity, the name of the principal officer of the entity, and the mailing address of the entity. And if it's paid for by individuals, then you just need the name of the individual and their mailing address. And if you've got a large group of individuals, the rules say that if you have more than five, you can simply say, for a list of sponsors, contact one person's name and address, and then they're responsible for maintaining the names and addresses. And sometimes when there are people who object to this kind of requirement in the political advertising, I think it's important for the newspaper to say, well, we have that as our policy, because you as a newspaper can set your own policies for your advertising. And so it's always very simple to say to the person, well, I'm sorry that this bothers you, but this is our policy for advertising, and so we need you to abide by it if you want this ad to run. And then the federal rules are just a little bit different. There, they basically can be, if you're dealing with an ad paid for by a candidate, you can say paid for by the candidates for Congress committee. You don't have to have addresses. Or if it's not financed by a candidate, then you need to say that it's paid for by a certain group, and it's either authorized by the candidate or not authorized by the candidate. And you can say it's paid for by a state committee. All the federal rules are available on the website www.fec.gov. And I'd be happy to give people more information about the federal rules if they need them, because they are a little different than state rules.
Great, Gene. Thanks. All good information. Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about advertising for controlled substances. Do advertising departments have special rules that they need to keep in mind when running these types of advertising?
This is a very interesting issue. There are very specific rules for advertising alcohol and advertising tobacco. And those rules are in part in federal law, and they're in part in the Missouri state regulations. And they're so critical that, for instance, with the alcohol advertisements, if you are a retailer, if you have a liquor license, and you violate the state regulations on alcohol advertising, you can lose your liquor license. And, of course, if you're a bar and you lose your liquor license, you're out of business until you get it back, which could be never if you've really done something terrible. So it's really critical that these entities know what the rules are that apply to them and that they don't break them. Well, there's no liability to the newspaper for whatever they might run. And because the rules are so particular and because there's such a risk of liability, I encourage the newspapers not to give advice about those. I think that those kinds of decisions needed to be made by the advertiser who's consulted with their own attorney so that they don't get bad legal information about what they can run and what they can't run. Because I don't represent a bar on a regular basis. I don't try to stay on top of those rules. And so if I give a newspaper advice to give the bar and it's wrong, the newspaper's possibly going to be liable, I'm possibly going to be liable, and I don't want to put us in that position. So my advice to all the advertising departments is that you tell these entities that you'll run whatever they give you, but don't give them legal advice about what they can and can't run, because that way you don't have liability if we're wrong. They can get the legal advice from their own attorney, who then is liable to the business if they give them bad advice. And that protects us, it protects you, the advertiser. It just is a better way of us managing this high-risk situation, because it isn't liability for us, but it definitely is for the advertiser, and so I think they need to know what they're doing themselves.
Thanks, Jean. Let's take just a short break here, and then we'll come back and talk about housing advertisements.
Newspaper personnel, ever wonder where you could find answers to the everyday newspaper operations questions? It's all here at mopress.com. Just click on any interior page, then look at the left rail under Missouri Press Association. See the newspaper toolbox? It has all the tools to help you succeed in today's tough media advertising market. From advertising to photography, promotion to Sunshine Law resources, it's all in the newspaper toolbox at mopress.com.
Hi, this is Dawn Kitchell, and I want to welcome you back to our monthly legal podcast with Jean Manicky. Today we're talking about different advertising issues for advertising departments. We've already covered political advertising and advertising for controlled substances, and now we're going to talk a little bit about housing ads. Jean, I understand that housing ads raise a special concern for newspaper advertising departments. What special rules apply to these types of ads?
These are where we have the biggest liability issues. The federal rules that relate to housing advertisements actually hold the publisher of the advertisement liable for violations of the rules. So we've had cases where newspapers have been fined for errors in their housing advertisements. That's why this is so critical for newspaper advertising departments to be very sensitive to what goes in their housing ads. There used to be lists of words, and there were charts that said, you can use these words, you can't use these words. But the problem that you get into with that is it's really not the word that's the liability, it's the context in which the word is used. And so I have gone away from recommending that people have these charts of approved words and not approved words. And what I say to our advertising department is, you need to define, you need to advertise, you need to describe the housing that's either being rented or that's being sold. You don't want to describe the renter or the buyer of the ad, of the housing, because that's where the liability is. For instance, you know, we all know that you can't say this housing is perfect for someone of a particular religion or someone of a particular ethnic background. You need to describe what the house looks like. It's a three-bedroom house. It's a four-bedroom house. It's a one-bedroom unit. You can't describe it's near a church or near a synagogue, because that would seem to infer that certain religious groups were more welcome than in others. You need to stick with describing the unit that's for sale. And if you do that, then there's not going to be liability. There are issues about Section 8 housing, which is the government subsidized program for housing. The courts have held that you cannot say no Section 8. The landlord can make that kind of a decision that they're not going to take Section 8 applicants, but you can't put that in the ad. And that seems really strange, but the idea is that it infers that you don't want low-income people in your area. So, again, you know, describe the housing unit, not the renter or the potential buyer of it. And if you stick with that, you're safe. I will tell you, if you have any questions, call me. This is the highest risk area, again, because if we make a mistake, it's a potential fine for the newspaper. And let me just add one little note to this. Employment ads are totally different. A lot of the same issues apply in terms of potential litigation. An employer has potential litigation if they discriminate as to who they hire, but interestingly enough, there's no liability to the newspaper. So if you've got someone who comes in and says, I want to run an ad that says women only age 25 and under, you know, they may have some discrimination problems in terms of their hiring practices, but there's no liability to the newspaper at all for running an ad like that. So the housing ads are totally different than the employment ads. There's no liability in the employment ads, but there sure isn't in the housing ads.
Thanks, Jean. Why don't we talk for a minute about adoption ads and other classified ads, such as lawyer ads, and then I know you've got some new information on some work-at-home schemes that you want to share with our listeners.
That's right. For a long time, we've had questions about whether newspapers could run ads by young couples who want to adopt a baby, and we get a lot of those, particularly here in the Midwest from California and New York. I think somehow they think that we've got a lot of young girls on the farm who get pregnant and this is a great place to find a baby. I don't know where they get those kinds of ideas, but we do seem to be ripe for those kinds of advertisements. They're fine to run. There's nothing wrong with them. The courts are always involved in those kinds of adoptions, and so there's no liability to the newspaper. There's nothing wrong with people running those kinds of ads. We see them a lot, and they're money, so feel free to take them and run them. I also get a lot of calls about whether a newspaper should run ads from a lawyer who's seeking class action people. For instance, it'll say, if you had a dispute with the local car dealer, or if you had a dispute with a local doctor, or if you think you have a particular medical condition, please contact me, the lawyer. Those ads are fine. They don't make, most of them at least, don't make accusations that a particular doctor committed malpractice or a particular car dealership ripped off all its clients. They just suggest that if you have had that particular situation, to contact the lawyer. They're basically fine to run, but there's, from a legal standpoint, but there's a different issue here too. Sometimes this is your biggest advertiser. If you're dealing with a car dealership in town, they may be buying a lot of advertising from you as a newspaper. And so really that gets into some personal issues for you as an advertising department. Legally, you may be able to run the ad. From the standpoint of making your business make ends meet, you may think this is probably not a good ad to run. And I just would remind you all that that's your choice. You can run an ad or not run an ad. You're not obligated to run every ad that comes in the door. And so feel free to make those kinds of decisions from a business standpoint.
And Jean, you were talking about a press release
from the
FBI.
Talk about that. Thanks, Don. Dealing with work-at-home scams. Apparently, there are a lot of people who are sending want ads, classified ads into newspapers advertising work-at-home schemes. And the FBI is finding that those are scams, that people are being hired to process payments or transfer funds, or sometimes they're being signed up as a mystery shopper, and then they're sending somebody sends them checks to cash, and they're supposed to send money to various places to test whether their company is doing what it's supposed to be done. And these victims are being told they'll be compensated with the funds. Now, I will tell you that you, the newspaper, probably have no liability for those kinds of ads. Clearly, if the federal government tried to find some kind of a conspiracy to defraud someone, it would be very difficult to prove a newspaper was any part of that conspiracy, because you had no idea that what you were running was fraudulent. But I do know that many of you have concerns about your local community, and so you probably want to scrutinize these ads closely just from that perspective. Don't be concerned that you'll be sued necessarily over it, but obviously you don't want to be seen as a source of bad information in your community. This FBI release said that job scams also often provide criminals the opportunity to commit identity theft if the victim provides their personal information. And again, that's not your responsibility if someone is silly enough to provide personal financial information to someone that way, but I can understand that you might have some community concerns, so I just wanted to make you aware of that.
Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll tackle our final advertising issue for this month's Legal Podcast.
What are you doing to ensure your newspaper receives its just share of advertising dollars? Profitable ideas for revenue growth will be presented and discussed at the Missouri Ad Managers Meeting April 30th and May 1st in St. Louis. The Know-It-All campaign designers will provide you with ideas for increasing reader interaction. You can question the old pro panel's experience in past recessions. Gene Manicky will warn you about legal landmines. Greg Baker will provide ad network sales leads. And special guest Candide Gregor will present her Ideas Worth Sharing workshop. The Missouri Ad Managers Meeting, April 30th and May 1st, at the Sheraton Westport Plaza Hotel in St. Louis. Will you be there? Contact Christy Williams at Missouri Press for more details.
All right, I'm back with Gene Manicky, Missouri Press Association's legal hotline attorney. This is Dawn Kitchell, and we're here today talking about different advertising issues for Missouri's newspapers' advertising departments. We've talked about political advertising, advertising for controlled substances. We've looked at different advertising regulations for housing ads and adoption ads and other classified ads. And now we're going to talk just a minute about trademark advertising. Gene, we just finished up the Super Bowl. The Final Four is just around the corner. What are the special rules that apply to these types of advertising?
Both the term Super Bowl and Final Four and Sweet 16 and all those terms that go with the basketball playoffs are trademark terms. And there are some advertisers who pay large money to get to use those terms in their advertising. And that's fine, they can use those. But many times newspapers will find their local grocery store wants to run an ad or their local liquor store wants to run an ad saying, come buy your liquor, come watch the Final Four here at our bar. And they want to use those terms in their advertising. You're not allowed to use those trademarked words, Super Bowl, Final Four, Sweet 16, those kinds of terms, in your advertising for local advertisers. They are trademark terms, and you will get nasty letters from the owners of those trademarks complaining that you've used them if you get caught doing it. And that's why you see ads that talk about something involving the greatest football game of the year or the biggest basketball tournament. They're euphemisms for those trademark terms. So you need to encourage your advertisers to use those kinds of words so that you avoid violating someone's trademark rights and so you don't get those kinds of letters that make you very nervous.
Well, this concludes our first conversation with Missouri Press Association legal hotline attorney Gene Manicky. We hope today's show has answered some of your questions about special advertising issues. A valuable benefit of membership in the Missouri Press Association is legal hotline services. Active members may contact Gene directly for advice and answers to legal issues. Gene can be reached by telephone at 816-753-9000 or by email at jmanicky@manickylaw.com. You can find this contact information anytime on the Missouri Press Association website at www.mopress.com. The website also provides links to Gene's blog and current and back issues of the Missouri Press News Magazine, which features a monthly column by Gene. This is Dawn Kitchell, and I hope you'll join us for the next legal podcast from the Missouri Press Association.